After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
To see you. Hi, everyone. This is our once a month Sunday hangout with Ram Dass, and I'm Raghu Marcus. So I think I told you on the phone, I have this amazing, I found a letter, okay? One of those aerograms, remember, like we used to send from India before there was what there is now?
Yeah.
And it was from Krishnadas. To me, you're talking maybe mid-80s or something. And he was with K.C. Tiwari and everybody out there. We had three major mentors in India. K.K. Shah, Dada Mukherjee, and K.C. Tiwari. We don't mention Siddhi Ma in the same breath because she's her own mother thing to us, I mean, beyond. But these people directly influenced us, and we're really part of what everyone receives, actually, when they come to Maui, to these retreats, when we're all gathered together with you and Krishnadas and all that. So anyhow, KC was one of those. And in fact, we're actually, we're going to make a little, we are in the midst of making a documentary about him because he's the one person of those three. Dada had books. Now KK has a book where people can actually reference who these people were to the Westerners that were over there at that time. So in the process of that, I happened upon this letter from Krishnadas that I'll read to you now, which is one time K.C. Tiwari and Maharaji met up in Nainital, okay? One time Maharaji came very late to Nainital. He was in a great mood, very happy. It was before Hanumangar, which is the temple, the first temple Maharaji built in Nainital, in that area. It was before Hanumangar was built and before night driving was allowed in Nainital. Okay, so you had to walk.
What?
Night driving. No night drive. Before that, it wasn't allowed because they didn't have proper, not that they have great lighting right now. I don't know why. It didn't make sense. They walked, or rather ran, out to the place where the Hanumangar temple would eventually be built, right? And now that place...
That's quite a walk.
Yeah. That place is where it was a cemetery or an internment place for orphans and children that had become very sick, right? It was a very haunted place. So they walked out there, ran out there. Many devotees gathered, as they used to, around Maharaji. After some time, Maharaji said, "KC, these people are always asking me to show them God." KC said, "Well, so show them." Maharaji said, "How can I show them when I haven't seen myself?" And KC said, "You mean there is no God?" What kind of an exchange is that, right? Maharaji said, "That's not what I mean." After a few minutes, he said, "You are a Brahmin. Have you read the Bhagavad Gita, the Gita?" he said. KC said, "Yes, I've read it." Maharaji said, "Did Arjun see God?" KC said, "Yes." Maharaji then started abusing KC. "You Brahmins and sadhus go on confusing the people and misleading them. Did Arjun see God?" KC said, "Yes." Again, Maharaji became furious and started yelling about how the Brahmins are the cause of all the misunderstanding and suffering of the poor people. Again, Maharaji said to KC, "Did Arjun see God?" By that time, KC went emphatically, "No!" Maharaji was silent. After a few minutes, Maharaji said, "Arjun could not see. Krishna said, see, but he could not see. When did he see?" KC said, "When Krishna gave him the third eye vision?" Maharaji said, "It comes from grace. Man cannot demand it or see with mortal eyes. But if you look at the lofty mountains or the rolling sea or the vast sky and think the Lord made this, it's all his projection. Then you can see." Yes. How great is that? And then in this letter, Krishnadas says, he said, after a few minutes, Krishnadas said to KC, "Well, what about the mess that man has made?" And KC said, "Why should you judge? It's just your judgmental mind." That's how he responded. And Krishnadas said, "Enough said. We can't demand. It will come by his grace. We should just try to remember that not a leaf flutters to the ground that God does not know." Nice letter, eh? From 30-odd years ago.
Oh, that's a beautiful. I'm happy, happy, happy.
Mm.
That's a wonderful letter.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine Maharaji saying, "How can I show them when I haven't seen myself?" And to Ari, the only way he reacted was, "You mean there's no God?" Because obviously, so
just how does he interpret it?
I think that Maharaji saying that is simply, and when there's no more subject object in a being that's gone beyond, there's no more I'm the way that we see things, you know, we're seeing it, there's a subject and an object. When there's no subject and object, what do you see? You don't see something separate from yourself, right? That level of it, maybe I'm being...
It's being, not seeing.
Yeah, being, not seeing, exactly. Exactly. And then this whole thing around Arjun could not see. Krishna said see, but he could not see. When did he see? And when the grace happened, which is karma and grace being one, so it can't happen until that. Yeah. Oh, boy.
You mean karma and grace one?
Well, if Krishna is going to give the grace to Arjun.
Oh, I see. I see. I see. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So anyhow.
Yes.
So I read this, and as I'm reading it, and I'm thinking of you, everybody out there, by the way, Ram Dass is sitting in his chair. Well, you can see him sitting in the chair if you're watching the YouTube video. and he's looking out at beautiful
the ocean.
Ocean forever. It just stretches forever. I mean, he's right at the edge of on Maui, near the cliff, which is at the edge. You could call it the edge of awakening.
And the clouds. And the blue sky. And the true trees. And the grasses. It's all manifestation. It's hard to be it and see it.
We like experiencing. So once we're in the relationship to experiencing, we are in a duality.
Our senses are obstacles to our knowing who we are. Knowing
But then on the other hand, the ability to utilize them in order to practice is a boon. So it's a double-edged sword. It traps you, as you've said many, many times, at the same time as it enables you to do the kinds of things that allow the being to happen, being here now, rather than the subject-object, which includes judging and so on and so forth. So, like last night, I was just telling you, we did a kirtan here in Asheville, where I live, and I had a funny experience. I was singing something, leading something, that Shiva chant, and I had just learned the melody. So I wasn't able to play it where I didn't have to think about anything. You know what I mean? Where it was just automatic. That's the advantage of Krishnadas. He's out there every night. It's all automatic, so he can just be completely present, you know. But I was in a situation where I wasn't comfortable because I really didn't know it. And I was trying to let go into the moment. And I was like fighting myself. And then at one point, something flipped, and I just, okay, it's whatever the mantra took me to a place beyond. I was still fumbling a little bit, but I wasn't attached to it, and it wasn't stopping the moment. And
your attachment.
Yeah, yep, to doing good, being good, all of that bullshit, you know, that all went away, and I found myself completely in the moment with the mantra. And so that sensory thing really worked out well for me last night, of, you know, the sound, expressing the sound, the mantra, and hearing it. And
the sound of the mantra.
The sound of the mantra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took over. So that's certainly a place. It's interesting we're talking about this, actually, because I also wanted to mention to you that I think I did mention, somebody wrote us, and, you know, with some questions for a publication, actually in Germany. And it's funny, because one of the things, I was just going to ask you a couple of the questions, because I think everybody would be interested in them. And we're talking about practice now, and the way that it can, or sensory stuff can trap you big time into an experiential dynamic, which is difficult sometimes to get out of. And that's why I just said the truth, the mantra, you know, the repetition of the mantra for me last night automatically moved me out of it. But one of the questions that they asked is the why is it so important? Because you have said it in many, many times, you, Ram Dass, over the years, that a spiritual practice is important. Why?
Well, you mean sadhana?
Yeah, sadhana.
Sadhana helps us get into what we are, which are our souls. Most people don't identify with their soul. The perception of the world, of themselves, is different. It's different from the ego. Different from the psychology. And the soul has love, has compassion, has wisdom, has peace, has joy. That's all you're missing, all you're missing. And you've got to get to your soul. I have a phrase to use to go to the soul. I am loving awareness. 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 And you repeat that. Loving awareness is a name for your soul. For soul, not your soul. Your soul is something to do with ego. So that's that one. Then sadhana is 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 a prelude to death. Is your death follows from ego to soul, ego to soul. And sadhana is really preparing you, preparing you for even for sitting bedside by somebody who's dying, or your parents, for example. That's pretty good.
So we could actually say doing spiritual practice, sadhana, is a way of re-identification, really. It's re-identifying you from ego to soul.
Yes.
Loving awareness. What, I mean, people call it many different names. That re-identification process is, I think you've said before, too, we're talking about it's a preparation for final, you know, when you die, your ego, identification, body, all of it goes. But on a day-to-day basis, which is another good reason for it, it doesn't matter how old you are, but on a day-to-day basis, that re-identification from ego to soul is so absolutely necessary to be able to live from a completely different vantage point. Yeah, which you talk about. And since we're talking a little bit about transition, so there somebody just quoted one of your books, Still Here, Embracing Age and Change and Dying. The book you finished after you had your stroke. So again, you know, we say these things and use these words, which I myself sometimes have a lot of trouble with, because they're easily said and not so easily put into practice. And the word here is embracing, right? Embracing aging, embracing change, just starting right there.
Embracing.
Embracing. How do we actually get to a moment where we can put our arms around suffering?
It's where we finish with our attachments. And then go towards change. Because the change what it is, and that you have attachments to it.
But how do you let go of those attachments? That's the real difficult. You're saying before.
Maybe grace.
I think it goes back to it goes back to sadhana, right? I mean, there's no way you can even get anywhere near, in my mind, the idea of embracing impermanence, change. The idea of embracing in this particular book, Still Here, aging, which, you know, all of us that are in the boomer generation are.
I'll tell you, my body is 86. And I'm embracing change, I'll tell you.
Are you? I mean, yeah, you've got it in spades, I know, because we talk all the time. How are you able to embrace when that kind of pain, and you're up all night because you've got that nerve stuff going on your leg that just keeps you up. I mean, it's just the thought of it is really difficult. How are you dealing with that in the moment?
I move from that to another pain, and then another pain, and then another pain. I meet them as friends. They're reminders of my that I have a body. I go far out to oneness or near the oneness, and I'm still limited time and space, and I better take care of the body because this is my karma. This is my karma.
And grace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that fierce grace that fierce grace.
A lot of fierce grace going on these days. Yeah. Oh boy.
It's our karma.
There's one interesting question that's about purpose. I mean, this is really probably something good for next generation people to hear from you. They're talking about the importance of finding one's dharma, and they are kind of equating it with purpose. And just my take is, one's dharma fuels or feeds one's purpose. But like in my own case, dharma, my dharma was when I found it, which is when I met you. I knew, okay, my dharma is to get to know who I truly am and not to be bound by attachment, desire, judgmental mind and all of that, was to work at that. Is I knew that was what I needed to do in this life, my dharma. And then my purpose developed over years where fortunately, in my case, actually, Maharaji said to me at one point, what do you do in America? And I'm trying to figure out, let's see, program director of a rock and roll station. How do you, what? That went through my mind. And before that thought even got complete, he looked up at me and in English and he pointed his finger and he went, broadcaster? So that kind of set my agenda and purpose for the rest of my life. Here I am sitting here right now in front of you with headphones on. We're doing a Skype podcast, right? But for people, so that's my take about, I found, that's what I considered. I found my dharma, and then over time, I found a purpose of, yeah, I mean, a lot of it had to do with working with you in the early days and then working over the years in different kinds of media and so on. But what would you say to people about that? What is it to you in terms of Dharma and a purpose, and how do they meet?
I don't see the differentiation.
Mm.
Dharma and purpose is intertwined from Dharma. You act dharmically, and it will get you to your goal if you want to go. And Krishna said to Arjuna, "The goal is mine." So we can say the goal is Maharaji's. Purpose. I'm trying to figure out what the purpose.
Well, yeah, meaning, you know. What do I do in life? What's my purpose? How do I manifest what my true purpose is in life? And what you're saying is it has to be completely aligned with Dharma, which you just explained with the story of Arjuna and Krishna. You align your purpose with me. And I guess that's a terrific thing when you think about in terms of how do you find it and actualize it. Well, the very first thing seems to be that you realize that you're not the doer. That's the lesson, first lesson of the Bhagavad Gita. And so it's to align yourself with Krishna or whoever Krishna, whatever name you want to put to that
Maharaji.
Yeah, well, easy for us, Maharaji. Which, by the way,
it's easy for everybody.
Yeah, I know. And there's a question here, which is, you found your guru in India and experienced this unbelievable love for him and with him, but most people don't have a guru. They don't find one. What do we do, and does everyone need a guru?
Everyone needs a guru. Mm. A guru is within you. It's within your heart and your imagination. And it's each person has a guru. Who's listening to this is a Dharma, and I offer you my guru. Come on. And then your life's so simple, having a guru, because all the problems you give over to the guru. The guru He has your life.
And of course, Ram Dass, wrote a book that going on a couple of million people read called Be Here Now, and the untold thousands of people, God knows, who all met Maharaji through that book, and then through Miracle of Love, by the way, which came out after it, some years after, that offer that you just made, you made back then. Of course, you were not supposed to make that offer. You weren't supposed to tell anybody about him, but you did. And you said, come on, here he is. You can have him too. And of course, the neat part about it is that no necessity for a physical body when we're talking about a being like a Siddha like this. No necessity. And so many people have found this and continue to find this, which is to me mind-blowing because, you know, I see all the mail coming to Love, Serve, Remember Foundation from people. I get call. I just the other day, some young guy who was at the retreat in spring, and he's actually been to a couple of them, he called me and he said, I'd like to see if you could help me out because I met you all at the spring retreat. I met Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, and all that. And I just, here, talk about dharma and purpose. This is an actual great story of that. I work for IBM as a salesperson, and I am completely dissatisfied with that. And it's just not something it's fulfilling. And I'm only 24 years old, so I feel it's right for me to go to India and find my dharma. And then I said, well, what have you been, you know, taking teachings? Have you known Ram Dass? So it's just a couple of years, you know, not too long. And in his whole tone of voice, I got, okay, Maharaji has absolutely, he said, Maharaji has been with me after this retreat in particular in the spring, which is a couple of months ago. We were in Maui together, right? And so I put him on a whole tour through Nainital to meet up with KK, right? And go to Kenchi and then go just hang out, you know, the whole tour, because that was exactly what he wanted. And he's just going to go off. And then I thought to myself, shit, I went to India when I was 24. I did the exact same thing. And yeah. So this story is repeating. And it's just, it's kind of amazing. But that does speak to, he's just aligning himself with that dharma, with Maharaji.
You know, I think if you spy the mail, but you find people that don't go to India.
Yeah.
Don't go to India and get the same hit from Maharaji.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good to make clear. You do not have to go to India. In this particular case, there are people, I'm hearing from people who want advice about, because they know I can tell them where to go in India and give them information and so on. So I'm hearing from that. I'm not hearing from people. Although that's not true. I am hearing from people who completely, utterly connect without going anywhere.
There are few.
Yeah.
There are very few.
Very few? There's a lot.
Very few.
What do you mean?
Compared to the whole number of human beings.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm talking about my little world here, okay? Yes. So here's another thing, and this relates to stuff we've talked about before. Whenever we hang out, especially since the beginning of this year when things changed in our world here. But this is a question around being happy, just being happy. And I remember one little story when my father came to visit my brother and I in India. unbeknownst to that he was going to do that. He suddenly said, wrote us a letter. I'm coming. Great, you know. And anyhow, when he did come, Maharaji said to him, why did you come? Why'd you come? And he said, well, I wanted to see how my sons were doing. And Maharaji said, well, how are they doing? And he said, well, they seem to be happy. Maharaji said, happiness is everything. And so here's a question, you know, how can we be happy when we, you know, our world is not a very happy place right now. We have a lot of unhappy and sad people. And how can we be happy amidst what is going on? And how, and ultimately, how can we be of service?
Your dharma is to be happy. Your happiness is inside. And that happiness is radiated to the culture. That's truly what social action is. And like we do the retreats, and the retreatants go to, after the retreat, they've gone with love, with love, with love, with love. All we did was we provided an environment for that love. And then they go out from love. And that ...300 people or something. And I feel that is my social action. Because this world needs love. Needs love. Each person's love. Your neighbors, your dogs. Your cats, yourself needs love. And when you have love, when you feel loved, you're home. Home spiritually.
Once you're home there, as you say, spiritually, quote unquote, you're most likely to be feeling at home in every different way. Your physical circumstances.
If this moment you're borrowing into this moment. Wow. Yum, 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 yum. this moment. Just this moment. Just, wow, this moment. It's right there, right there. In a moment, you don't say, it's not time, it's not hours and minutes and stuff like that. A moment is infinite. Is infinite. Just this moment.
Mm. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, this is a good way to start off our summer, right? We're just a day or two after the solstice in 2017. And by the way, everybody,
I had a solstice gathering.
Yeah,
I went to one that was Hawaiian.
Oh, really?
In a heiau.
Mm.
That's a piece of land that's sacred, and there they prayed, and it was just sensational.
Really?
Sensational.
Was it over the ocean or near the ocean or in the mountains?
Yeah.
In the ocean. Uh-huh. Wow.
Mountains and the ocean.
Oh, man.
It was in the mountains, and you should go and see the ocean.
Mm.
Wow. And Leo, she's a holy woman. She has this heiau, a temple.
Yeah.
And there were about 50 of us.
Mm.
Great big circle.
Mm.
And we had love, that circle was full of love.
Mm.
It was the kind of love, spiritual love. It was not loving things or people. It was just love. It was just the kind of love that Maharaj is using.
Mm.
Unconditional love. Unconditional love. Unconditional love. Till then, to the up to the Maharaj. I had never had unconditional love. I was a good boy. That was loving. I was cute, loving. I was somebody before, and I still wrestle with that.
Everyone will appreciate that you're still wrestling with anything. See, it's okay. Yeah. Wrestling goes on.
Yes, 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 yes.
Wrestling goes on. It's okay. I got that message from you the first minute I saw you and we talked, and that message has stayed all the way through to this moment. And I was going to say, yeah, you know, thank you for all of the wrestling that you do, you know, wrestling with that body and dealing with all that stuff and making friends with the pain so you can continue on. I mean, thank you. And thanks for our hangout here today, too.
I'll tell the aches and pains that you think.
Who's that? Your cat? The kitty?
Yeah.
All right, so this is Ram Dass here and now. We forgot to tell everybody. There's a kitty, little kitty ears. This is Ram Dass here and now. And one of our, I shouldn't say live installments, but I should say one of our Sunday afternoon chat installments that I appreciate so much. Gives me an opportunity.
They're really wonderful.
Yeah. So thanks so much, Ram Dass. And everybody, we will see you next time on Ram Dass Here and Now on the Be Here Now Network. Ram Ram.
Goodbye, everybody.
This podcast is brought to you by the Love Serve Remember Foundation and ramdass.org. We appreciate you listening, and we appreciate all the support that you've given us. Please continue that support and donate at ramdass.org. We can then continue to share what Ram Dass has been sharing for all of these years. Thank you.